From the Land Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market reported as the 31st day of March, 2026. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It's USDA Report Day. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom at TotalFarmMarketing.com. She'll help us detail both the prospective plantings report as well as the grain stocks figures that were released by the United States Department of Agriculture at 11 a.m. Central Time this morning. We'll hear from the University of Missouri's Jason Franken. He analyzed the latest hogs and pigs report figures, and then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast as we close out our time together. Don Day will be here from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This morning, the United States Department of Agriculture released both the grain stocks and prospective plantings report. The latter is the first official survey-based estimate of U.S. farmers' 2026 planting intentions for the year. NAS acreage estimates are based on surveys conducted during the first 2 weeks of March, by the way. The sample size was nearly 74,000 farm operations across the whole of the nation. It found that producers surveyed in the United States intend to plant 95.3 million acres of corn in 2026. That's down 3% from last year. Planted acreage intentions for corn are down in 37 of 48 states. Acreage decreases of 300,000 acres or more from last year are expected in Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin for corn. If realized, the area for corn planted in Nevada and Washington will be the largest on record, while Connecticut, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island will be the smallest on record. Soybean growers intend to plant 84.7 million acres in 2026. That's up 4% from last year. Acreage increases from last year of 300,000 or more are expected for soybeans in Arkansas, Iowa, Kansas, Mississippi, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. Now, here's how the markets reacted and closed. Corn futures settled at $4.57¾, up 2 in the May, July 3/4 higher at $4.68¼, December 1/4 higher at $4.84¼, May beans 11¼ higher at $11.71, and November at $11.57½, it finished 13½ higher, July up 11 cents at $11.86. Naomi Bloom from TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin, now joins us to talk about how the market reacted to the USDA prospective plantings and grain stocks figures. First, which of the two do you think moved the market more thoroughly?
I think actually this time it was the acres report. I was, you know, curious, of course, to see on the quarterly stock side of things, where things were going to fall in place. We were looking for, I think, you know, for corn, we were looking for maybe a slightly smaller quarterly stock number, but just thinking of how hot and heavy our export market has been. And so we were able to get that today, where the quarterly stocks number coming in at 9.02, below the average estimate, but, you know, within the range of expectations. So not too much excitement there. And on the quarterly stock side for the beans, coming in at 2.10, just a little bit higher than the average estimate. So then with nothing dramatic there in reference to demand, looking at the acreage report, there wasn't, you know, a lot of excitement there either. And I was just thinking to myself, I'm like, boy, it's been a long time since the March 31st report didn't transpire in some dramatic pricing event or big technical signal charts. So, like, on the corn side of things, the corn acres coming in at 95.3, yes, it was a million more than trade was expecting as far as the average estimate, but well within the range of estimates. And for the soybean number coming in at 84.7, below the average estimate of 85.5, you know, that was supportive for the beans, but nothing on this report today screamed overly bullish or overly bearish. And I think that's why you saw the corn market just kind of stay put. Prices closing today 0.25¢ to 2¢ higher. That market's still range bound, doesn't have a fundamental reason to get over that $5 handle yet. And on the soybean side, we did finish with gains, 11 cents, but again, still off the highs from just a few weeks ago and not a lot of fresh news.
Given that, are you still of a mind that for old crop, if producers have it yet to sell, that they need to continue to market it?
I do feel that way, just because if there was anything exciting that was going to come on this report, it would have happened. And we just did not get that. So we don't have a fundamental reason at this moment for corn prices to go racing higher. Now it's going to have to come from something weather-related or war-related in order to get the corn price to rally anytime in the short term. Doesn't mean something can't happen later on the summer, but now you have to ask yourself, you know, how much does the market have to rally to justify holding and storing that corn for another, 2 to 3 months? So that's the situation that we're looking at.
Okay, now look forward into the new crop. What are you thinking today?
I'm still thinking that Dease corn is on the struggle bus to get above $5 futures. And in my opinion, it still is that we're not going to see Dease corn get over $5 unless there's got to be like three things that happen. We have to have crude oil rally and retest that $120 area. We need to have some bad weather occur on the second crop, Safrina corn. It's not perfect down there, but we're not hearing, major issues at the moment. And then we will need to have a weather issue here in the United States. The one thing I'm a little cautious of, the funds last week had gotten to the point where they were clawing their way higher as far as almost long 300,000 contracts of corn. And if they wanted to go longer corn, they could become almost 400,000 contracts long, but they need a fundamental incentive to get them there as well. And we saw them backpedaling late last week and early this week with some selling. So we just don't have that big movement to get corn prices higher for right now. So my tone is still a little bit cautious, keeping an eye very much so on outside market influences, watching fund money control, watching the war, all those types of things. There could be, those little outside market influences that make the market go higher. But for right now, we are just stuck. We didn't get anything big and dramatic out of this report today. So I'm wondering if we just see some now kind of quiet and cautious trade until we start to see the planters roll.
One of the things that happened last week was the Friday ag event, US EPA announcing the RVOs or renewable volume obligations. And that appeared to be really quite good for soybeans. I was listening to the webinar that the FarmDoc team did late this afternoon. It should be on our website at willag.org once Jim Boltz has that moved to YouTube and I can put it there, probably after 4 o'clock today. However, Scott Irwin, who's probably the foremost expert in this area, one of them in the nation, did suggest that we will be pushing crush capacity to near 100% sometime in the second quarter. That's a move higher, but crush has just been unbelievably good for soybeans all this marketing year. I'm wondering whether that makes much of a difference for the price of soybeans and or where the funds have positioned themselves and what they might do going forward.
Yeah, and I love everything that you said. It's so true as far as demand for the biofuels, and I hadn't heard that we were getting close to capacity, but that makes a lot of sense to me with all of the new plants that we built over the past couple of years and the expansion that's been there. So that crush number and that strong crush demand has been keeping this market propelled higher because we have lost demand on the export side. So I think for now, a lot of that has priced into the market, and the funds clawed onto that, and that's part of the reason why the funds are long in the soybean space, including the soybean meal and the bean oil, near record long or are record long with the soybean market. So for them, I'm not sure how much more room there is for them to continue to buy. I'm not sure how long they're going to continue to defend their long position or what makes them say, okay, time to give up and walk away and take a profit. That might be something that isn't totally tied to the marketplace until we get, into our planting season and have a better understanding of where our production is going to be when all is said and done, along with hope still that the United States and China are going to get along. Maybe we can get some more export demand there. So it's propelled the market higher. I think it's priced into the soybean market. I think it's known news. But I don't think that at this time we have a reason for the bean market to get above $12, especially on that November contract. We finished today 11.57.5. $12 is just going to be a huge hurdle for soybeans, just like $5 is going to be a huge hurdle for corn.
On that note, thank you, Naomi.
Thank you.
That's Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. In today's agricultural news, the Environmental Protection Agency released the long-awaited final renewable fuel standard volume obligations for 2026 and 2027, and U.S. ag groups responded positively. The final rule locks in the highest ever renewable fuel volume obligations and provides clarity for farmers, ethanol producers, oil refiners, and fuel distributors alike, says Jeff Cooper of the Renewable Fuels Association. Jed Bauer, president of the National Corn Growers Association, said the announcement, combined with the summertime E15 waiver from last week, is a positive move for the nation's corn growers who are navigating an exceptionally difficult environment. And Rob LaRue, president of the National Farmers Union, says these increased targets for biodiesel and renewable diesel send a strong signal to the marketplace and create meaningful new demand for America's family farmers and ranchers. And finally, Scott Metzger, president of the American Soybean Association, thinks it's a needed win, and this announcement delivers a big win for farmers. Well, the Ag Retailers Association is welcoming the Environmental Protection Agency's action to address diesel exhaust fluid system failures, or DEF. The ARA called it a timely step to support farmers and agricultural retailers as spring planting gets underway. DEF systems malfunctions have caused costly equipment downtime and operational disruptions across agriculture. The EPA's action to remove the problematic sensor requirement will help keep equipment running and reduce unnecessary delays in the field. America's agricultural retailers and growers continue to face high fuel cost and tight margin, says the president at ARA, CEO Darren Kopic. This common sense relief will help them to stay productive and profitable at a critical time of the year. ARA also emphasized that the timing of the announcement is especially important as farmers prepare for and begin spring planting. ARA's board of directors recently ratified this issue as a policy priority for 2026. And finally today, recent developments in digital technology and AI are streamlining loan underwriting and reducing cost for farmers. Mike Davis reports.
Blaine Nelson, chief economist with Farmer Mac, says this is just the beginning.
I think a lot about through the lender's lens, just this need for a more efficient, a faster, a smoother process in working with farmers. We're probably in the early stages of it. We've seen a lot of advancements made in the past several years. But when you think about, you know, the increased adoption of AI, I know that's a buzzword right now, but it's certainly going to accelerate some of these processes. Again, speaking purely to the lender side, just in how they actually underwrite a loan and work with a borrower on a loan.
Nelson says the advancing technology has also made getting a farm loan faster.
We're talking about shorter times from actual loan application to submission for a farmer. You're talking about more transparency in terms of what actually matters on a loan application. You're also talking about reduced costs in a number of instances, whether it be for, you know, the appraisal process or just the actual man hours required to underwrite a loan. If that helps bring costs down for the farmers and it makes it a more efficient, smooth process, I think it's a win-win for both.
Putting it in historical perspective, Nelson says Farmer Mac works behind the scenes to give farmers more and better choices.
Farmer Mac was spun up in the 1980s, really post-farm crisis, to kind of help solve some of that liquidity issue that comes along with certain types of loans. So we like to think that we give options to lenders to offer farmers better rates. It's not always true, but it certainly at times is. And really, I think just any time that a farmer has a greater selection in terms of loan products, which we help banks offer or other lenders offer, again, it's the farmer that wins in that process.
I'm Mike Davis.
And I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Do find us online at willag.org, willag.org, where right now today you'll find a list of the states and changes in the Corn Belt for both corn and soybean production acreage. You'll also find eventually the Farm Doc webinar hosted during the 1 o'clock hour today for you to watch as a YouTube video as it relates to the prospective plantings and the grain stocks numbers. Again, that's at willag.org, willag.org. Here's a quick item on the March Hogs and Pigs report. It places the March 1 inventory of all hogs and pigs at 74.3 million head. That figure, by the way, is down 1.5% from the first quarter, but up nearly 0.5% from a year ago. The breeding herd dropped to 5.89 million head. It's the lowest March level since 2014. Despite fewer sows farrowing, the winter pig crop saw a slight increase, driven by a record 11.9 pigs per litter. University of Missouri agricultural economist Jason Franken anticipates this efficiency will persist.
Continued productivity should be expected given historical trends and biological feasibility as indicated by pigs per litter in other countries.
Looking at the broader market, cold stocks of pork are down 5% year over year. However, U.S. per capita pork consumption, that's how much we eat, is forecast to rise to 50.3 pounds per person in 2026. And exports are projected to reach 7.2 billion pounds of pork. That's a 3.1% increase over last year. When examining profitability, the first quarter saw a hog-to-corn price ratio averaging about 19. And while a ratio of 20 typically signals herd expansion, Rankin notes that producers are still recovering from past deficits.
With such rates of profitability following the losses producers incurred in 2023, a prolonged path to sufficient financial recovery to spur herd expansion is to be expected.
Instead of expanding, Rankin says,
rather, the industry is in aggregate currently appears fairly adept at managing pork supply by balancing farrowings with anticipated increases in productivity in terms of pigs per litter.
Price forecasts indicate a rise from a first quarter average of $85.33 per hundredweight for hogs to $102.41 by the third quarter. That'll dip back toward the end of the year. Ultimately, Franken concludes that as a whole, the outlook for the pork industry remains positive, although he cautions ongoing geopolitical and trade disruptions could still pressure export demand and drive up feed and fertilizer costs. The theme music for the closing market report is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Early this morning, I took time to watch the full Pentagon briefing on the war in Iran just to make sure that there was nothing new there related to agriculture. I didn't really see or hear anything that changed it fundamentally for agriculture. However, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as he's prone to do, Dan Kane, made some comments that I thought were worth listening to. This time around, it was about a World War II ace.
This morning, I want to share that yesterday the Joint Force had the honor of participating in the burial of Colonel Clarence Emil Bud Anderson, who passed away in May of 2024 at the ripe old age of 102. He was laid to rest in Arlington Cemetery yesterday morning alongside his wife of 70 years, Eleanor, who he married on February 23, 1945. She passed away in 2015 at the age of 92. Bud, yesterday, a legend to our Air Force and fighter pilots everywhere, was honored with a combination flyby of F-35s and a four-ship of P-51 Mustangs. He was one of the most prolific flying aces of World War II and the highest scoring P-51 ace with 16 and a quarter kills in his squadron and in his group. And he served from 1942 to 1972. And his last combat tour was flying F-104 Thunder Chiefs over North Vietnam. For anyone that had the chance to meet Colonel Anderson, you knew what an incredibly special man he was. And that's true for each and every one of our World War II vets who become fewer and fewer with each passing day. They are the greatest generation and give us the gift of an incredible example as we execute Operation Epic Fury today. And Colonel Anderson, we mourn for your loss and remember that smile on the right side as you went out to do our nation's business.
General Dan Kane is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and was speaking during this morning's Pentagon briefing on the war in Iran. Thank you very much for taking a moment to indulge me. My father served in World War II, and my grandfather served in World War I. I will take a moment now to pass on this note. I had the privilege of accompanying my father on an honor flight for World War II vets. There were Vietnam vets along as well. If there is someone in your life who served, I urge you to accompany them to Washington, D.C. on an honor flight to thank them. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Don Day is here. He is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, tell me about the weather we have upcoming.
There's a little bit of everything in the forecast as we head out of March and into April. The first days of April look to be quite wet. We're going to see a system come out of the Plain States producing showers and thunderstorms in the next several days across a lot of the Midwest and the Corn Belt. Some of the very dry areas of the Western Corn Belt and Central Corn Belt could see some really good rainfall. Rainfall amounts could be 1 to 3 inches or more by early next week across a lot of the Corn Belt, including Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, down into Missouri and Arkansas. The very dry areas of eastern Kansas, eastern Oklahoma, and east and central Texas will do well. On the north end of this pattern is going to be wintry weather. We could see heavy spring snows across portions of the Dakotas, northern Wisconsin and Minnesota, into the upper peninsula of Michigan. And we're also going to see some very beneficial moisture in the very dry areas of the West, from the Pacific Northwest and Central and Northern California to the Central and Northern Rockies, where some beneficial spring snows will hit the higher elevations there. So April's starting off with a bang, although there's still going to be some areas that miss out. Still very dry in eastern Colorado, western Kansas, and winter wheat country there.
Thank you much, Don. We'll check in with you again next week to see how things have changed in the growing areas across the Midwest and around the planet. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Do check out our website at willag.org, willag.org. There you will find, soon enough, today's Farm Doc webinar on the prospective plantings and grain stocks figures. And you'll also see the changes by state in the Midwest for corn and soybean acreage across the Corn Belt. Again, that's all at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.